Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes podcast. I am your host, Dr. Paul Etchison. You may notice I sound a little stuffy today. Yeah, I got sick. I got this interview I recorded, and we had to reschedule it like 3 weeks ago because I was sick. Then I got better, and then I got sick again. Still no COVID for me. I'm knock on wood here. I still don't have COVID, but I can't say I'm feeling the greatest or just still really stuffy and just ready for this head cold to go away. But I got a really good episode today. I got someone who's contributed a whole bunch to the dental industry and just lots of sharing, lots of putting things on paper, wrote a lot of books, and someone who's had a lot of experience in owning multiple practices as well as startups and acquisitions. And we're just going to talk about the associate angle. And if this is something you've ever thought about doing, this is the episode for you. If you ever thought about, maybe I do want an associate, or if you've ever thought, man, I don't ever want an associate, I can't ever deal with that, maybe this is the episode for you as well, because we're going to kind of go into like some of the pros and cons and some of the challenges and how to deal with them, as well as what having an associate in your practice can bring for you as the practice owner. So all great stuff, great episode, a lot of fun to record and catch up with them. So without further ado, let's get to it.
The Dental Practice Heroes Podcast. Business, communication, leadership, practice, and life success. It all starts with a hero. It all starts with you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast, where we believe that armed with knowledge and intentionality, anyone can become the hero that their practice needs and deserves. I'd like to welcome my guest, a repeat guest. He's a practicing dentist, author, speaker, and business coach, has owned 8 practices and currently owns 1 startup in Lincoln, Nebraska, author of now 6 books on everything dental. Please welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Addison Killeen.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Glad to get to talk with you again.
Yeah, man. I want to tell the listeners where I'm looking at, Addison. Tell listeners where you are, where you're doing this interview from.
I'm doing it from an empty bay in the building that I just bought where my dental practice sits. So it's a former Cost Cutters. So I kicked out the Cost Cutters. I kicked out the real estate company and I kicked out a gym. And unfortunately, the gym didn't leave any of their equipment. So yeah, so I've got a bunch of places where I could play indoor paintball. I could have an indoor golf driving range. I've got so many possibilities, but yeah, it's going to be a dental practice in a few months.
Nice, man. Congratulations. All right. Well, today we're going to talk about associates, just all things associates. You got a new book about associates as well as marketing. I want to touch on that a little bit, but like, let's just talk about, why do you think associates are important when we're looking at practice ownership and from like a revenue as well as like a burnout standpoint?
Oh yeah. I think you and I both know that we can only do so much work with our hands. And so when I look at, you know, what my weeks look like and what my months look like, when I have an associate with me, A, it's more fun to do dentistry. Like, it's just good to have somebody to kind of lean on and say, hey, I'm running behind. Can you take that exam or can you do something? Like, can you help me out? And so that's really, it's freeing to be able to have that kind of other person in the office. But also from a success standpoint, when I look at the most successful practices around, I mean, of course, you have these folks that are one doctors just killing it, like 1.8 million and running super low overhead, but they constantly tell me that they're on the edge of burnout or they're already there. And so, you know, for these people, really having an associate is the way to unlock a little bit more freedom and to still be able to run a super successful business in a more joyful fashion. And so for me, and I think for a lot of you out there, hiring an associate is that key to just be able to take a few days off. Like, I'm going to take a Thursday, Friday and go to the water park with my family or something. And having somebody else in the office to run the office, even if they're not as productive as you are, is just super powerful and profitable. And so both you see it on the profit end, which is nice, but the freedom end is sometimes even better.
Yeah, it's so true. In my experience, it was like, I felt that burnout, and that's when it was time for me to add an associate. I was like, gosh, I can't do this. I was coming in early. I was staying late, and I just kind of got pushed over. Like, I just have to find somebody. It was just, I had to do it. But for other people that aren't quite at that point, but they think they might be ready for an associate, how do we know that our practice is ready and can support an associate before we even start like looking or thinking about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a few metrics that are super important. And in the book, we kind of go through, like, are you ready? And do you, you know, what are the metrics? So number of exams you're doing per month. Now, this varies widely because some doctors are very bread and butter and they can do over 125 exams per month. And so at over 125, if you're just doing bread and butter, you'll keep your schedule busy and you can kind of pop in and out of exams, and that's great. But let's say that you're a Panky or a Spear or super comprehensive dentistry, and you're talking about gum inflammation all the way down to, let's discuss your acid reflux, and you know, you maybe have a larger dollars treatment plan every month for full mouth cases or orthodontia or implants. When you're having to do that many more discussions with both new patients and existing patients, you know, usually the burnout point is anywhere between 100 and 125, or sometimes even below that. You know, some doctors can run on one hygienist and they're doing 80 exams a month and they're keeping their schedule full and they're doing well. But usually if you're in that 100 to over 125, you'll start to see burnout. And we see burnout. I mean, some doctors can even go up to 160 exams per month and it can be okay. But it's a mix of all the types of exams you're doing between comprehensive and periodic, although the problem focused usually are treated differently. And so, you know, some of those metrics would just be, are you still able to treatment plan the same amount that you did when you were less busy? Or have you seen your dollars treatment plan start to drop because you're just too rushed? Maybe you're in one room and prepping a crown, and the other room, the patient's waiting on getting an implant placed, and then you have three hygienists breathing down your neck saying, doctor, you're late. And so you pop in and you're like, well, I could treatment plan that cavity, but you know, it doesn't look super bad yet. And you convince yourself to just pass it up. And you just say, well, you know, we'll get to it next time. Or you could discuss orthodontics or Invisalign, but yet you don't have the time or the energy. And you just say, you know what? Like, yeah, you're looking good. We'll see you later. And then you got to get back over and prep your crown. So sometimes when you're that busy, and it's usually you're doing financially well, like usually you're over $1 million producer and you're doing well. Well, then you start to think, okay, that's when I need an associate. But the second step is, are you going to be emotionally ready and financially ready to take the hit? Because as you know, adding in an associate is not super profitable for the first 3 months. It's maybe break even from 3 to 6 months. And then after 6 months, okay, then you're back to your normal income level and they're at a profitable level where they're successful as well. So you kind of have to be ready to take a financial hit for about 6 months to be ready to bring somebody on.
You know, that's interesting that you say you're basing it off of how many exams we're doing a month, because I've never really thought about it that way, but it's true. That is like the burnout point, and just switching gears and talking to that many people, it's a lot. And I feel like that was what's most stressful for myself before I had an associate. I was had three comms of hygiene, lots of new patients, still seeing 89 new patients a month. And I'm in the middle of an endo, and then I got to get up. And that new patient, there was a lot of stuff we didn't talk about because I just had to get back to this person that's sitting there open with a rubber dam. I could totally relate to that. Now, as far as you mentioned being emotionally and financially and ready for it, what else about like the emotional part where people are, I've heard these horror stories, they never work out, you know, people are never going to do work as good as you. What would you say to that person that is kind of that cynical about adding an associate?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to be self-aware enough to know if you're ready to be a leader and a coworker with somebody. So some doctors, and I'll just play on this fact, they're usually the old dogs, and they've been doing this for 35 years, and they're like, well, I got to get ready to sell, so I'm going to bring on an associate. But then they're not ready. They've built up a lifestyle based around an income every month. And so when that income drops, they're pissed off. And then they start saying, well, this new doc isn't doing exams the way I wanted it to be done. And so the new doc isn't great, and got to start thinking of firing them. And so being emotionally ready in my book would mean that you have the self-awareness to know that your income is going to drop for a few months, and then to be ready to want to lead a new whoever's in your practice, whether they've just come out of school or whether they're really experienced. It's going to take leadership on your part to coach them into how you do things. And hopefully you want to teach them, because from the minute they walk in your practice, they have their own habits and ways of doing things. And it's going to take a lot of effort on your part to teach them. You know, the quote that I steal from my buddy Jason Tenuri is like, no, this is how we do things here. And so just, you know, however you do it somewhere else, that's great, but this is how we do it here. Whether it's, this is how we take impressions, this is how we do crown preps. It's okay if you want to use different materials, but you just got to prove to me that those materials are better than what I'm using now. stuff like that. And so it's not an instant, like, your start date is on Monday and come Monday at 5 p.m. I gain more freedom. No, it's actually like 3 months of intense coaching and training and getting them into your systems. In those 3 months, you're not going to be making as much money. And so it's kind of a two whammies. And so you have to be ready for those multiple changes, and the team sometimes gets stressed out by change. You know, all of our teams, I'm sure, they just don't like change at all. And so a new person in the practice and a new person that's brought in, like, no matter what, the doctor is the leadership position just because of our degrees. And so when you bring in a new leader and they don't have the same style as you, that's another stressor. And so you might have team members say, well, that doctor's a jerk. Like, I'm going to quit if they're not gone. And you might have to say, okay, Susie, I wish you the best and I'll write you a good letter of recommendation. But, you know, this is the way the practice is going. And if there's something that can be improved on, I will talk with the new doctor about it. But that happens all the time as well, is just team turnover because of the change.
Yeah, it's true. And getting along with new dentists for team, that's always seems to be a challenge, at least in my opinion, is that people treat and plan differently. People do different things. And for me, the metric that I care most about is that, are they taking good care of the patients? Is the clinical stuff good? And are patients complaining? Because I've had associates where patients are complaining and the team is complaining. And I've had associates where the team kind of complains, but the patients are totally fine and give 5-star reviews. And the first one was the one that we let go. And it's tough. It's tough to sift out that stuff between, like, the team when they're giving you so many things and they're so used to you. But I couldn't agree more. You've got to decide where your practice is going. And if the team wants to get on board, good. If they want to self-select out, good. I think life is better with associates. I think there's so much, and you mentioned the freedom aspect. But yeah, it isn't as easy as just signing a contract and letting them run around and just do dentistry. What would you say when we're looking for new associates? Like, what kind of things should we be looking for in these future associates?
Yeah, well, new associates, I mean, there's every size and type of person that you want to look for, whether they're huge producer or whether they just like their bread and butter stuff or whatever. But there's the clinical skill set, there's the speed of their clinical skills, their emotional ability to connect with patients. And so, yeah, finding the right candidate is tough. I mean, usually you got to start to cast a pretty wide net and then you narrow it down from there. You know, you could go with somebody straight out of school, of course, because a lot of folks right out of school are just looking to start to hone their craft and pay off a little bit of debt. And so, you know, you'll see a lot of applicants from dental schools or 1 or 2 years out. And then, of course, you have the ones later on in their career that have maybe moved because of a spouse or something. And so they've got some experience. So clinical experience would be one thing. And then the emotional capabilities, their smarts, their ability to connect with patients and their personality type. In the book that we wrote, Dr. Casmol and Dr. Tanuri and I, the Associate Dentist Manual, you know, basically what we do is we use these personality tests. Now, the majority of the tests are ones from a company called Higher Select. And so they are research-backed personality tests. There's one called the cognitive assessment, so you see how smart they are. Personality assessment to see how their personality is. And then their emotional intelligence to see, can they really connect with patients? And then they also have a new divided attention test, which shows how well can you multitask, how well can you keep multiple ideas in your mind, which, as you and I both know, when you have 3 hygienists and they all tell you, hey, there's Mary in room 1, there's Susie in room 2, and there's Joan in room 3, and Joan has a distal decay on 15, but Mary has this on tooth number 6, and the first one we talked about ortho, and you have to keep all these ideas in your mind, it's super hard. And so we love to use those tests, and there's examples of those tests in the book, which are really useful. The other test that we created, we call it just the dentist success test. Basically, we created this. It's about 13 pages. And usually what I do is I give this to my applicants, and it goes through, and we call it a pre-interview test, because it basically answers every question that might be uncomfortable to ask in an interview, like, how long does it take you to do an anterior root canal? All right, how about a bicuspid? All right, how about a molar? Like, going through all those iterations, as well as, you know, how fast are you with certain procedures? How comfortable are you doing certain procedures? So basically getting a full rundown on, like, are they interested in learning the business side of the dental practice? Are they interested in self-improvement? And then asking some long-form questions as well. I think there's 5 long-form questions about okay, this scenario, this patient comes in, how would you handle it? Different things like that. So there's about seven different metrics of timeliness, quality, goals, and kind of the procedures that they do. And so we have that. And between those two tests, it gets me to a really good idea of what does this applicant look like. And so hiring the right person is usually casting, like I said, casting a wide net and then really figuring out whether this is the right fish you want.
And what do you think about hiring new graduates right out of school?
Sometimes you get great ones and sometimes you don't. I was coaching a dental student at a free clinic the other night, and he was like, hey, can I save these molars that I extracted? And I said, well, I don't care. And he said, well, I like to take them home and I practice root canals on them. And I'm like, well, that's the kind of dentist you want. I mean, he is so invested in his clinical skill set that he's willing to go at home at night and he wants to practice finding canals on a extracted molar. Like, that is amazing. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm usually willing to take chances on new grads, and that, you know, I'm in the process of hiring one new associate now and probably one next year from a graduating class. So I'm totally okay with it. And sometimes they work out really well. Sometimes they don't. The one thing that I will warn against is that new grads, unless they've had previous work experience, they don't know what the dental world looks like. And so they could come into your practice and they might think you're overbearing by wanting to check their class twos for the first month or their crown seats for the first month or two. And, you know, that's your job as the owner of the practice. Like, you gotta do that. Some people might not like that, but the people that understand that they've been maybe in multiple other clinical scenarios, they're going to be the ones that are like, oh, your practice is actually awesome. Like, I actually get paid a decent wage and have good team. And there's some other practices like corporate or other practices out there that just are much different. And so a new grad won't have the lay of the land quite as well as some experienced dentists.
Yeah. How do we check the clinical work? Like, how do you go about checking it, like, without being too overbearing?
Yeah. I set the expectation from day one for the first like month or two of the practice, I'm going to be checking a lot of their clinical work. So I was just going through the quality assurance sheet today with my leadership team for this next doctor we're onboarding. They have to take a picture in a bite wing of every class two restoration for the first 15 of those. Every crown preparation needs to take a picture, IO picture of, for the first 15. Every crown seat for the first 15, like, take a bite wing and IO picture. Implants, surgeries for the first 5, root canals for the first 10. And so basically I want to just double check that you know what you're doing, that, you know, you're putting out good work. Because if an associate stays with me in practices for a year and then leaves a trail of bad work, it reflects badly on me and my practice and the brand that I built. So for me, I want to just be absolutely sure. And I set that expectation from day one, and most people are like, oh, okay, that makes sense. If they're not okay with it, then I'm not okay with them working at our practice.
Yeah. Now, what would you say is the most challenging aspect of bringing on an associate, and what advice would you give?
Oh, the most challenging aspect is finding the time to coach them, because everyone needs coaching. It's not because they're not good. It's just because you got to teach them how you do things. So it's kind of basically making sure that you have enough time, because it will be overwhelming. And unless you build in the time and are ready to coach, that can be super overwhelming.
And what do you guys do as far as onboarding? You mentioned what you do for checking the work, but what else, other kind of things are you doing?
Yeah. So we have a full onboarding packet that we give to folks of like what to expect before they come on, what to expect in the first 2 weeks, and then what to expect the first 90 days and then after. And so a lot of it is just basically making sure that you have like 30 minute doctor meetings every week. So for the first 12 weeks, 30 minutes a week, just kind of review cases, go over how things are going, improving, declining. And so that's a big one, making sure that they just know how to do everything in the practice, because as their position as a leader in the practice, if they don't know how to do something, it just looks bad. So they have to be good enough with the scanner, with the IO camera, with the sensors, with the software. They need to kind of get up to a high level pretty quick, even though they might not be doing these things. Like, I want them to know how to take an alginate impression, even though they should never take an alginate impression. That should be the assistants. You know, I want them to be good enough so that they can hold other people accountable to a high standard. And so just kind of building in that onboarding protocol that for the first 90 days is going to be pretty intense. Like that's going to be really important.
Now, you have this book on everything associates. We said we were going to get to the marketing, but we're kind of out of time for that part. Just tell listeners about the new marketing book, just what's in it and what they can expect.
So, you know, I kind of just write books of whenever people have issues and such. Basically, the marketing book was the one that answered the questions that I got most about marketing. And so that's the most pressing questions about how to do internal marketing, external marketing, how to set up your Google SEO, your Google My Business. It does get pretty deep into the weeds, but it does answer pretty much every question that should work in most dental practices and examples of like postcards, t-shirts, and everything like that. And so that's what it looks like. And I don't know, it's like 240 pages and full color, nice pictures. So a lot of examples of paperwork that we use, brochures, basically to just make sure you look like you know what you're doing and you have a good brand and have a good product to put out into the marketplace.
Yeah, not to put you on the spot, but could you name all six of your books right now?
Yeah, I got the Dental Operations Manual, the Startup Manual, the Acquisitions Manual, the Associate Manual, the Marketing, and then the original one, which is By the Numbers. So, yeah.
Hey, well, you did that pretty good, man. I thought you were going to be like, oh, man, I'm at a point where I can't even remember them all at this point. All right, let's move on to the segment where we share little systems that add up to big results. Dr. Killeen, what is your little system?
I'd say my little system is just texting for reviews. Like using, you know, we use a product that just texts people, asks them for their reviews, and we get really good reviews. Right now we have over 1,100 and we've only been around 3 years. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of, it's gotten some pretty good ROI there.
You want to plug somebody?
Yeah, we use Swell CX. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's a good product.
Gotcha. 1,000 in 3 years. Dude, we're at like 1,300 something and we're at like, I mean, we're 10 years in. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So we focus a lot on the patient experience. So it's been good.
Are you guys also like personally asking like, hey, like verbally, or is it just all just the software?
Yeah, we do a verbal ask as well. And then, you know, we just prime them enough that, you know, just saying like, hey, we're a new practice. It would super help out if you could do that.
Yeah. What does your closest competitor in your area have?
Oh, maybe 500 or 600. So
now you're just getting greedy.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make it a no-brainer for folks.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's move on to the segment where we celebrate that all of us are human and none of us is perfect. Dr. Killeen, let's get real.
Everybody get down. It's about to get real in here.
What is your biggest struggle at the practice right now and what are you doing about it?
Well, my biggest struggle is the real estate piece and moving. I got to move a Pizza Hut down about 50 feet and it's going to cost me about $400,000. So that is my biggest struggle, is dealing with a corporate Pizza Hut that doesn't want to move so that I can build out my 15 operatory practice.
That's such a big like added expense to something that's already expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So there's no way around it. You can't just bridge over the top of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just make a hallway through their kitchen.
I wish, but then it would smell like dough. That would be weird.
Yeah, not the dough you want, the other dough. Yeah, right, yeah. For sure. All right, if you could go back in time to the beginning of your career, what do you wish you could tell yourself?
I would take more clinical CE. I would double down on ortho, endo, implants, sleep, everything. I would get a little bit deeper so that I don't feel so useless some days now.
Now, how much clinical are you doing nowadays?
I do 3 days, but I'll probably cut it down here a little bit soon.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to manage with all the things you got going on, I imagine.
A little bit. Yeah, I don't have time to write books as much with 3 days clinical as I used to.
just six of them, right? Yeah, I bet. All right, well, share a story where you learned a valuable business lesson from an experience or the hard way.
So I had a dental assistant do drugs on me recently over the lunch hour, and so I had to fire her the next day. But, you know, really it just proves why you need to do background checks and call all the references on somebody's application. And if they work for other doctors, just call the other doctors. This was a new employee. And so it was just really, it was an unfortunate thing that I had to hire this person and then 2 weeks later fire them for doing drugs on the clock.
Jeez. So like, did you call the references on this one?
No, I didn't. Just because we're so desperate. I was like, nah, yeah, you're hired.
Yeah, I don't even know if we're calling references. Like, I don't do any of the hiring anymore, so it's like, I should ask.
Yeah.
I always thought it was funny when people put references available upon request. I'm like, you can't even, like, list three people. Like, we're not even going to call.
Your three friends,
Yeah. You know, it's just, I'm like, okay, no, that was always a red flag for me. We talked about your two books. What else you got coming up down the pipe? What's new for you?
Pretty much just, like, keeping busy with real estate and... We have Dental Success Network, so we just grow a lot there, and just keeping managing all that is just kind of crazy, and building up a 15-op practice with more new patients than I know what to do with. So just kind of keep on trucking down the same path.
How did you manage to buy your building?
I approached my landlord, and basically it took about a year to kind of negotiate, but then I was able to basically convince them that they could rip off the dentist and they could get a really good ROI and sell out at the top of the market. And so they sold it to me. And even in my internal numbers, I'm like, it's a breeze. It's a no brainer because the amount of revenue, the haircut place, there was a sign up here the other week before they ripped it all down. Their monthly goal was $25,000 in haircuts on a 1800 square foot lease.
Jeez.
So for $25,000. So, whereas we're doing like 300,000. So we're doing over 10 times as much revenue on per square foot as they are. So it's just a no brainer. It's like, no, we got to build it out.
Now you mentioned you have made some people leave. How do you do that when you own the building?
It was fortunate that they had kind of violated their lease in a few areas and a couple of leases were coming up. And so it's just over the past 6 months, I've just been slowly kicking them out.
Okay, so then it's gearing up to do your expansion. And what are you thinking of expanding to? How many operatories?
15. So 12 general ops and 3 surgical ops.
That's a big team.
Yeah.
It's going to require, that's a big piece of machinery there.
It will be expensive for sure.
Yeah. That's exciting, I imagine, though. I'm happy for you, man. That's awesome. All right, let's move on to the Dental Practice Heroes Sexy Six.
Six sexy questions.
What is your favorite quote and what does it mean to you?
Oh, I'd have to say the quote, I just read it from Tom Brady this morning. He was talking about how he took some time off to spend with his family. And he said, you know, joy isn't always found in happiness. It isn't always found in sadness. And then he mentioned something about it's not always great in the sunshine or in the rain clouds. You just got to keep working ahead and there's seasonality in life. And so I thought, I was like, man, smart guy. He's got a few rings on his fingers to prove how successful he is. And I think that's, you know, some days are great, some days aren't, but you got to survive.
Yeah, dude, I love that quote. I had Spencer Greer on here and he did a Tom Brady quote, was something like winners focus on winning and losers focus on winners or something like that. And I'm pretty sure that was a Tom Brady quote. And I'm just like, dude, when is this guy getting so quotable now? I mean, this is, now there's another Tom Brady quote.
This guy writes books. Yeah. And he's, of course, you know, very successful.
Absolutely. All right. What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a good one. It's classic. And so I'm reading that with my leadership team.
Yeah. I put that one off for a long time because it was old and I'm like, it's outdated. It's not going to be pertinent. And if you didn't know it was old, you kind of really wouldn't know. It's not too bad. And I think
some of the example companies he uses is like the Rochester Paper Company. I'm like, who the hell is that? Who makes paper anymore?
Yeah, it's true, man. I think my favorite part of that book was, I think there was something about when you're criticizing or something bothers you about somebody or you're pointing the finger, there's three fingers pointing back. I think that's part of that book.
It is.
Yeah. It'll read so much, it's like it all gets muddled together. All right. Recommend a book that all dentists should read.
Well, I tell you, I think The Servant by James Hunter, The Servant. I mean, we all are leaders in our own life or our own practice, and I think we got to accept that and take advantage of it. So The Servant. So it's all about servant leadership and, you know, what it takes to be a leader.
Awesome. Recommend a seminar or continuing education.
I just got back from our mastermind weekend in Texas with the DSI. So, you know, I think any private coaching group that gets together and shares ideas is great.
Yeah. How big are those things?
This one we had about 175 people.
Wow. So, and you guys get together 4 times a year?
Yeah. And then a big summit with about 700 to 800 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's awesome. I know a lot of people who've been in the program, and I've had a few coaching clients of my own that have been in the program and said really good things about it. So
yeah, it's a fun little group, and it's good to see that everyone's, even no matter how successful you are or how bad you think you are, everyone's problems are the same.
Yeah, it's so true. Absolutely. All right, please share an analogy that you use to communicate an idea to a patient.
I always say that periodontal disease is like an infection the size of your hand that's just in your mouth and you can't see it. And so once you say the infection the size of your hand, people are like, ooh, that's not good.
Yeah. It's amazing how much in dentistry we're trying to make things like just, it's all hidden. A lot of it doesn't hurt. We have to like come up with these things to make it bigger than it actually seems to the patient. It's crazy. All right, last question. If you have three pieces of advice for a new dentist, what would they be?
For dental students coming out of school, you know, first thing would be to take more clinical CE so that you just get a wider picture of the world and better clinical understanding. Because if you get the clinical down, everything else is easy. The next thing I would say is read more books, you know, just get a wider picture of the world from people who have written their word down and stuff. But finally, I'd say record yourself. So record yourself doing exams, like treatment planning, how you discuss with patients, because sometimes the way that you learn will be to see yourself in action. And that's the only way to truthfully see yourself in action. So kind of turn your phone on record. Just, you don't even have to take video, but if you could just get video of the back of the patient's head and how you interact, that's great. But the audio, like just see how you phrase things, where you could improve, where the patient squirmed a little bit, and kind of get better at explaining things. And I think that's more powerful than any piece of equipment or CE course that you could ever have.
Yeah, it's eye-opening. And we have this tiny little like cube GoPro. It's like 1-inch by 1-inch cube. You could just set it right on the counter. And it's amazing how much denial I was about my posture when I was talking to patients. Like my hygienist would be like, gosh, you guys sit up in your chair. And I'm like, I'm fine. Like, leave me alone. And then I took a video of it. I was like, my God, wow. It's like, and the stuff that you will say, and you'll realize these patterns. That's one of those things. That's one of those uncommon things that I think could really make somebody a lot better, because it's very eye-opening and you do learn a lot from it, more than you think you will, would be my experience. And you can just do it with your phone, obviously, too. But, you know, there's all sorts of ways to do it. But yeah, man, Addison, thanks so much for your time today. And gosh, thanks for all the contributions, all those books, man, all on Amazon. I go to my author page on Amazon. It just says one book. Can't wait for my next one to come out so I can be like a multiple book author. And look at you just putting all this stuff like pen to paper. So good for you, man. Thanks for everything you do for the industry. And just thanks for really taking the time and coming and talking to the listeners today.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Paul. Good to chat with you.